Welcome to NC Asian American Ministries Podcast. My name is Sammy Ju, and I'm your host. This podcast is to highlight the life and ministry of Asian American leaders and to network them for advancing God's kingdom in North Carolina and beyond. Today, we have Granville Chris as a guest. Granville is the lead pastor of Concord International Church in Charlotte. Hello, Granville. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing really well.
Great.
Glad to be here.
Actually, I'm at Granville's new home. They just moved in yesterday. So yeah. How was your moving?
It was very long and tiring, but we had a lot of people helping us. So that was really good. And we're still in the process of unpacking. As you can see, there's still a lot of boxes. So, wow, hopefully we'll be done by the end of this week.
Thanks so much for spending your time for this podcast. Today, we want to know your life story.
Mm-hmm.
So, can you tell us about your family?
First of all, my name is Granville Chris Casino. I'm from the Philippines, and I am married to a wonderful lady named Wawi Casino. And we have a four-month-old named Gabriel, and he's such a joy in our lives. Obviously, we're not getting a lot of sleep yet, but I'm sure that will change. That's what Sammy reassures me anyway. My parents are both missionaries, and you know, they've been in the ministry for a long time, so I basically grew up in a household that taught the Bible. My dad has been a pastor for as long as I can remember. And so has my mom. In fact, my dad married his pastor. This was back when they were in the Nazarene church.
Oh, okay.
So that's a little bit about our family. I also have a brother, and he was also in the ministry for a very long time, and he continues to serve the Lord.
Well, Granville, I got to know a little bit about you, that you lived in several different countries.
Mm-hmm.
So what countries did you live?
I was born in the Philippines, so I lived there. And then after that, when I was 10 years old, our family moved to South Korea. So we lived in Seoul for a while. And then when I graduated high school, I ended up moving to the Czech Republic, to Prague, where I lived for another 5 years. After that, I went to Buffalo for 2 years, which is up in New York State. Then I went back to Korea, then back to the Philippines, and now after we got married, my wife and I came back to the United States. We studied in North Carolina at Gardner-Webb University, and so we just graduated a few months ago, actually, with our Master's in Divinity. And now we continue to serve God here in Charlotte at Concord International Church.
What language is the most convenient to you?
To me, speaking in English is probably more convenient. I'm still trying to relearn how to speak Tagalog because that's my native language. But after living in Mindanao, I've also learned how to speak Hiligaynon a little bit, at least for conversations. But English is the most convenient for me because I think in English now.
Good. Now, how did you become a follower of Christ?
I became a follower of Jesus when I was 6 years old. I was exposed to the gospel a lot because my father was a pastor. But what really led me to Christ was in 1990 there was a huge earthquake in my hometown, and it was very devastating for our city. It was in Baguio City in the Philippines. And one of the things that we did, we were living in a seminary at that time, was they gathered the kids together because school was canceled. And so they would basically a free daycare for the kids in the community. And one day we were talking about cockroaches and mosquitoes and stuff like that. The teacher was telling us about how to make sure that we kept our places clean, that we would basically throw away all of the still water so that the mosquitoes couldn't bite us, and And that was probably the first time I can remember where it felt like death was real to me. And it was in that conversation that I started, you know, asking questions about, you know, if I died, where would I go? And so, just to make a long story short, it was then that I realized that I really didn't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, that if I died, I would not be with him. And so, that ultimately, I was just scared of going to hell. You know, I didn't really understand what it meant to commit my life to Jesus Christ. But, you know, that's when I prayed that prayer of salvation. But the process of actually, you know, becoming Christ-like, it's taken a long time. It's taken my whole life to get to the point where, you know, I would really obey God's call. But, you know, I consider that when I first became a Christian, when I first realized that I needed to give my life to Jesus.
How did you sense God's calling in your life to become a pastor?
Well, that's a pretty long story. Honestly, seeing the way my mom and dad worked very hard, and you know, being a pastor sometimes is a very underappreciated ministry. It's not glamorous. They sacrificed a lot for these people who sometimes, you know, don't appreciate what they're doing back. So, I mean, I was determined not to become a pastor. Right? I wanted to become a doctor. And so I ended up going to medical school. And then after that, I switched to physical therapy. And then just after all of these years of trying to run away from the ministry, I ended up getting a degree in theology so that I can teach high school. But there comes a point in your life when you recognize God's call. All of the gifts that he's given me in terms of my talents and abilities, I really speak to pastoral ministry. And so I just said, Lord, I give up trying to maintain control of my life and trying to determine my direction. And so call me. I mean, lead me to where you have called me, because he's been calling me for a long time. So lead me where to where you have called me. And that's how we ended up here. Mm-hmm. I did end up pastoring a church in the Philippines. It was called Zion Christian Fellowship. Mm-hmm. And that was in Mindanao, in Sarala. So, but everything about our lives has led to this point. And it was only when we started to actually pay attention and listen to God's voice that I recognized that I was called to this ministry.
Do you remember that scripture verse that you were convinced to become a pastor?
There wasn't really one verse necessarily. I think growing up, I always heard that all of us were ministers. Because my dad always stressed that one of the things that is a common responsibility to all Christians is to tell others about Jesus. So I tried to be a good evangelist, quote unquote, you know, even in my normal life. But I think when I recognized that I wanted to become a teacher, I even got a teaching license actually in the Philippines. But when I was in the ministry, I remembered it was most fulfilling when I would teach. Not necessarily when I was preaching or doing any of that stuff. And I recognized that when I was reading Ephesians, I believe it was in chapter 4, when the Apostle Paul was writing about how God gave some to be apostles, right, some to be pastors and teachers. And he goes on to explain that so that the whole body would be equipped to do every good work that Jesus Christ has prepared for all of us to do. That's when it clicked with me that, you know, being a pastor is being a teacher, being an equipper, so that it's not just pastors or ministers doing the work of the body of Christ, but all of us doing the work of the body of Christ. And we need people who will equip the body to be able to do that. So that's when it made sense to me that, okay, I really want to be a teacher, but the pastoral ministry actually gives me that opportunity.
What are you most passionate about?
I think you can tell this whole idea of teaching others. Mm. I'm really, really passionate about that. I think, you know, growing up, I just loved reading, and I just loved accumulating information. I used to think very, very highly of myself, very smart, and so it was all about proving that I was smarter than other people. But it wasn't until I became an adult that I realized just how self-centered I was. And I'll talk about this a little bit later when we talk about the biggest challenge in my life. But something happened to me that made me reconsider what it was I was doing and how I was, where was I going with this? What's the point of making yourself smarter than other people? And I realize now that my passion for teaching comes about because I love gathering and accumulating information. And I recognize that the whole point of that is so that I can also share it with other people. One of the things that I've discovered as a pastor is that not everyone has an opportunity to get theological education, and I am now in a position where I can train others and share with them the things that I went to school with, for, and for free, which is great.
What is the highlight of your life?
Honestly, I don't know how I would have answered this question a few months ago, but having our child is such a big blessing, and my wife and I are so grateful that we have Gabriel in our lives, because he just teaches us so much. Like I said before, I have a problem with self-centeredness, and yet there's nothing that you don't want to do for your child, you know. And it's such a joy and a blessing to have such a wonderful baby boy like him.
So, and he is 100, how many days old now?
130? No, something like that, like 126 maybe. Wow. It's somewhere in that range.
That's great.
Now, but he's 4 months.
Yeah, can you share with us what was the lowest point of your life?
You may have noticed that I use a cane to walk around, and a lot of people ask, you know, what happened to your leg? You know, how did you get injured? The thing is, there's nothing wrong with my legs. There's really nothing wrong with my physical body. What happened was, I have a hole in my brain, and this only happened in 2011 when, you know, I was in the Philippines, and I would just start randomly fainting and collapsing. So this led to me having seizures, and I started having seizures. But by the time the doctors, you know, took a look at it, whatever was there, when they discovered the MRI, whatever was there just left a hole. So they don't know what caused it. I have no history of neurological problems, but whatever was in that hole, they theorized that it could have been a cyst or a tumor or something, but it was gone. So it affected my balance, it affected my coordination. But those first 2 years were so difficult because one of the major side effects when your balance and coordination aren't really working out very well is that, you know, I'm always dizzy. And my head always hurts, and that's actually something that persists even today. And I don't think people realize how difficult it is for me to wake up every morning and, you know, do my daily activities. So that's why I have a cane for my balance and coordination. Most of the time, these days, I'm good, but you know, it still comes back. My last seizure was, 3 days before Father's Day, and this year. And it was very difficult for me to prepare. But the lowest point in my life was the first two years of when I got sick, because I was bedridden and I was basically just confined to that little room, and I couldn't get up. And I was very angry because, you know, like I told you, I considered myself very smart, right? But now, the one thing that was broken was my brain. And I was so dependent on that. I was so dependent on my intelligence. But now I couldn't even get up. I couldn't think. I couldn't think straight because the headaches were so powerful. They were debilitating. And, you know, I was on a lot of medication at the time. There was one point, I think it was about 6 months, where I was taking 27 pills a day, which, you know, that does a lot to the human body. And essentially, I had to be sedated because if I had any kind of stress or any extreme kind of emotion, it would trigger my seizures. And that was really, really difficult for me to deal with because I couldn't read anything that would stress me out. So no news. I couldn't even follow sports, right? Because, you know, if your team wins, then you're happy, you get a seizure. If your team loses, you're sad, you get a seizure, right? And, you know, one of the struggles that I had when my wife, she was my girlfriend back then, she would tell me a joke, I would start laughing, and then I would start having seizures. And it was such a difficult time, because, like, what are you supposed to do? You know, how can you talk to people? And so I was on such powerful medication that was basically just like a vegetable, right? And for someone who thinks so highly of themselves, that was difficult. Because now I could no longer be independent. I had to depend on other people for all of my needs. So, you know, like, I don't think people realize that when she was in school, whenever she had a break, she would come to my place and she would, you know, like, see what she can do for me. Like, she would take me to the bathroom because I couldn't stand. So, I mean, she would, like, she literally, like, had to wipe my butt for me and stuff, you know. And for someone with a lot of pride, that's very humiliating. But at the same time, you know, the community, and this was really sad, the community started, you know, spreading stories about her, and it was really vicious because they would say that, you know, she was only doing this for the money. Like, I had no money, and she was only doing this because she was pregnant. And, like, as you can tell, you know, yeah. Our first child was, like, a few months ago. So it was really destructive and toxic for both of us. But at the same time, you know, I really started to question, you know, why would you allow me to go through something like this? You know, I was so angry at God for those 2 years. You know, I realize now that one of the lessons that I learned there was to recognize that the people around me are there because they helped me understand that my faith is supposed to be lived in community. It's not something that we can do on our own. And we shouldn't try to live our lives by ourselves. And having to be dependent on other people for everything also allowed me to recognize that, you know, I really wasn't at a mature part of my life in my relationship with God. Because when I was healthy, I was doing everything for myself, right? You know, I basically had this thing where I believe in God, but I trust in myself. So if I need anything, you know, God can just stay over there. And because I was in control, because I was smart enough to overcome everything. Well, this I couldn't overcome. And so it was the lowest point in my life, but at the same time, it was, I think, probably one of those necessary things that forced me to take a look at what I needed to do to get my life back together, and to really understand where I stand in my relationship with God. I'm not the one in control. He is. I'm not supposed to be dependent on myself. I'm supposed to be dependent on Him. And if that means being humble enough to accept the help of others, then I had to do that. So that's a long story.
Well, that's great.
But that's where I am now.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your life story, but not just a life story, but your real authentic experience that you experienced the hardships can be turned around and turned into a great experience to know who God is, how weak we are, so that you have more faith in God.
Yeah, and just to add on a little bit shortly, like it was interesting because, you know, I like to consider myself a strong Christian back then. I went back when I was healthy, but I didn't recognize that, you know, I was actually being very ineffective because, you know, when you're a young Christian and you're trying to do things for God, you're just trying to accomplish things, but in order to make yourself look good, right? So that's part of the reasons why I, like, you know, I would join the worship team was so that people would see me up there and think about how cool I was. But it wasn't until I was sick that, you know, I started collaborating more with other people, like doing youth ministry with my wife and stuff like that, because then we saw that, you know, it was when we work together and give other people the opportunity to join in ministry with you that God was using the community to spread His light. And it wasn't about me being in the spotlight, it was about all of us working together so that the world could know who God was.
Thank you, Granville, for sharing. If you want to hear more podcasts from us, find NC Asian American Ministries at your podcast and subscribe it. You can listen to our weekly podcast update. Thank you, and I'll see you in the next episode.